And now, live from Chicago, here is the Black Knight of Talk Radio, James Arthur Yontzeff.
Not analyze or justify it. Ain't that hard to do? Talking, walking, straight.
All right, we are back and we are live, and we're going to be talking 9/11 in particular. What exactly? Well, I want to say brought down, but better would remove the buildings. Dr. Judy Wood, her website, drjudywood.com. Does this direct energy weapons of unknown mechanical origin, which was used to disintegrate, dustify was a word, the buildings on 9/11, and which has created quite a stir. There's a division in the 9/11 community and so forth, some people calling each other crazy and not crazy and all that kind of stuff. But we had a request from listeners to have her on to talk about her piece. I've looked into it. It's very interesting. And she is, from 1999 to 2006, Dr. Wood has been an assistant professor in the mechanical engineering department of Clemson University in Clemson, South Carolina. Before moving to Clemson, she spent 3 years as a postdoctoral research associate in the Department of Engineering Science and Mechanics at Virginia Tech. Dr. Wood is currently writing a book with Morgan Reynolds based on the physical evidence for understanding and explaining the events on 9/11. Dr. Wood started to question the events of 9/11 that same day when she saw and heard on television was contradictory and appeared to violate the laws of physics. Since that day, she has used her knowledge of engineering mechanics to prove the collapse of the World Trade Center Twin Towers could not have happened as the public was sold. Well, I would definitely agree with that, and I would welcome you on to Feed the Fire, Doctor.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Well, I mentioned in the opening of the show, I heard about the whole 9/11 idea was late compared to a lot of people's. It was the 2004 when a guest was on unrelated to the topic, talked to me about it. And from there, I've had guests on and so forth and so on. And I kind of went into the camp of the demolition. So I'm very interested to hear your case. I've looked on your website and I've actually seen a couple of interviews. From what I understand, your position is that this weapon had dissolved or disintegrated the building into dust, and that there wasn't a collapse, that the collapse by demolition does not fit the evidence.
Correct. And if folks would like to go to my website, and on the homepage, there's a link that says Cliff Notes. So it's drjudywood.com and then /WTC. Will take you directly to this page. It takes a while for this page to load, so that's what I'm saying early, but everything's on that page, so you don't need to flip to different pages.
Alrighty.
And if you look at the evidence, you see something else, other than bombs in the building is what I call it, casually.
Right.
9/11 was a psyop. I think we'll all agree with that.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, I think the most conservative way to put it is that what happened was not anywhere near what we were told.
Correct. So the best way around that, I figure, is to not hear what other people have said, but just look myself to see what I am convinced of happened. And when I began this road, I knew nothing about directed energy weapons or what possibilities there are out there. As I say, you don't take a multiple-choice test when you're not sure if all the choices are there.
Oh, yes.
And we're easily funneled into it. Maybe it's human nature. Easily funneled into this false choice of either it's the official story or something else, or the grassy knoll.
Right, right. And most of the people listening, for the most part, we have new people all the time coming and going, but most people have already have a, we'll call it a 9/11 101 based on these other things. The key focus that you bring to it is not whether or not 9/11 was an inside job or what have you. It is how it actually came about, how the buildings collapsed, and the damage that you are saying is being done by saying it is stuff like a demolition.
The damage is not in agreement with it. But what I was getting at was that we're easily ramped into this either-or, this two choices, when there could be a third choice.
Oh, yeah, like the Democrat or Republican.
Right, right. And if you do you have that web page open?
Yeah. Well, right now I'm switching computers because I want to have a plenty of web page for it. So go ahead. I will get there.
Okay. There's a video at the top. There's actually two videos. Some do more for one person than the other. But looking at those videos, it's of the event, and it's rather striking.
Now, are these videos different than other videos on it? Is this a different angle or something?
Somewhat. It's fairly close up, and you can see, for example, I call them wheat checks, these 3x3, three stories tall by three columns wide, sets of outer columns.
Right.
They came prefabricated, and they look like wheat checks, so that's what I call them. And you see these wheat checks flying through the air, and they dissolve like ice cream melting before it hit the ground. And there's nothing left except dust. It just blows away. It's rather striking.
Okay.
And you don't need to know how it was done in order to see that it happened. So the first thing to start out with is identifying what happened.
Well, I'm also seeing large chunks that didn't dissolve.
A few, but what's left is just a very, very small fraction.
Right, right.
Of the whole thing, and we all saw huge amounts of dust.
Right.
What made that dust? And it went up into the upper atmosphere.
Right.
Which is another bizarre characteristic. If you look at regular controlled demolitions, my favorite one to compare with is the King Dome. The dust doesn't rise really above the initial height of the structure. And
right.
It goes down. It's heavy dust. It's coarse dust. And it settles out fairly quickly. It doesn't go on for days and days, and it doesn't go up.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's because it's higher, it got smashed smaller. I don't know.
The smashing. Let me know when you have that video.
I've already watched it a couple times now.
Oh, okay. And the one on the left?
Yes.
You don't see it smashing against anything. You see the parts flying through the air turning
right.
to dust.
Right.
So in order for something to smash against something else, it needs to, have something rigid that it impacts. Air, I don't think, does that.
No, that's why I see what you're saying, but I guess all I'm seeing also is I'm seeing the powder, the things, and I also see these chunks flying through the air that presumably hit the ground and broke.
Well, they get smaller and smaller by the time they hit the ground. And if you look at right after the event, each of these sections, if you ever want to come back up the top, there's a little index link.
Okay.
So you can jump between sections. But if you go past that block of text into the section called debris.
All right, debris, right.
All right. Figure 1 shows these people coming out of their hiding places right after Tower 1 went away. And you can see from their postures, they're saying, oh, my gosh, what's going on here?
Yep.
There should be a building in front of us. And there's no building, and you just see paper in the streets. That's where those wheat checks should have landed. We saw them coming down into that intersection, but they never hit the ground.
Well, I guess with the nature of photography, I'll just take your word for it. I mean,
there's pictures of that intersection from different directions, and it's just a sea of paper with a few pieces of aluminum cladding. There's I've got hundreds of pictures of this right after the event, that day before noon. And there's this very little seal, like figure 3. We're looking over at building 7. So we know what day it is because building 7 is still standing, but there's no tower between us and building 7. And there should be. So here we are at street level. And you can see in the distance on the left the pedestrian walkway, which is above the street.
Well, I'm going to assume this is. I'm just speaking, right off the top of my head, and this
yeah.
is where you can show me. Is I would assume that the majority of the building is actually air because you have the structure and then you have the rooms, so that if you took the whole building and you broke it down, the main component would be air, followed by the structure, followed by the desks and whatnot inside.
This is correct, just like with any building.
Right.
That's why the pile, roll pile you would expect wouldn't be 110 stories tall.
Right.
It would be something smaller. And it's not going to be stacked up real neatly. It's going to be, you know, this random pile of stuff.
Right.
It's not going to be one story tall or less than one story tall. Like figure four, it's a view just to the right of figure three, looking almost directly east. We should be looking directly through the front door of Tower 1. Instead, you see this ambulance, and last I checked, ambulances were parked at street level.
Right.
They weren't, you know, up in space. And you see the remains of Tower 1, which is just a few outer columns. There's a little bit of something in the middle. Not much, really, more than one story.
Again, from this photo, even if I would disagree, it wouldn't be much. There's not much more, put it that way.
Right. You could say two stories.
It's pretty small. I did note that being rather odd that it was so crushed down, and especially the things that are melting underneath it and all that. That is the
melting.
They had that molten material underneath and so on.
Don't make assumptions. Have you seen the molten metal?
I saw one picture where they were grabbing the material up, and there was this hot, red hot.
Heat doesn't come through pictures. You saw something orange, and you made the assumption it was hot.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll see otherwise on that.
Okay.
But anyway, going down, so you can see there's not much left. Like figure seven, you're looking east to west. 2 days later, you're looking, ground level all the way through. But there's something interesting about figure seven. You got dirt all over the ground. How is it the building turns into dirt? And in figure six, you can see that the eight-story building, which is WTC-6, it towered over the remains. It is, where'd the building go? Where'd the material go? Doesn't add up. And folks might think it goes into the basement. There's various reasons why I, don't buy that. Yeah, not that it's totally undamaged in the basement, but there's an audio clip I have here where the very first rescuers are going down to the basement. Anybody there? And you hear it echo. It doesn't sound like a full parking garage. It sounds like an empty one. It's such a clear echo.
Right.
There's pictures of, a few months later, lifting the PATH train out of the rubble, what's left. The holes in Building 6, like, for example, look at Figure B and the sections of holes.
Okay.
VZA. You can see like cylindrical cutouts, like somebody took a hole punch or a post hole digger and just took out core samples.
Yeah, that is kind of odd how the building collapsed but didn't fall inside the hole. Yes, and then there's another building.
And figure C is this is temporary. Well, I'm still building the page, but figure C is from inside that hole, looking up. It's just you're standing there at ground level.
Right.
You can count all eight stories there. By the way, any of these pictures, if you click on them, you should get a big picture, like on a new page.
Okay.
If you want to look at any of them. In figure E, you're looking over building six. You can see the remains of seven, which is still isn't much either on the other side. But where is the north wall? Just worry about the north wall of Tower 1. You see it leaning over Building 6.
This is an E?
Up to about the height of Building 6.
This is an E you're talking about?
Yeah, figure E.
All right.
You're looking over that dome.
Right.
Of WSC2. And, you should see something of a pile over there. You see some of the north wall leaning over the remains of Building 6. But, that's an eight-story building. So where are the other 100 stories of the north wall?
Well, I mean, you're asking me. I mean, I don't. You're putting out a reason for it. I mean, I don't know the reason. My assumption would be that all the little stick figures you see in the picture are all part of the wall. That's all just spread out all over the place.
But the building there that's eight stories tall. is taller than any of the pieces of paper. We've looked down that street and seen there's just paper left in that street.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm going to say if it falls down 100 stories, I would imagine that it's not going to stay together too well. And that's why the big pieces on the bottom are because it was at the bottom. I mean, that would be my...
The big pieces?
Well, I meant you showed those pieces leaning over the side of the building there.
Oh, they're still connected to the ground. They just bent over.
Right, right. So, I mean, that's why I would say that they're together is because they're close enough to the end of this catastrophe that they didn't fall through the skies and break apart.
Okay, what about the story, you know, one story above that or two stories above that? Where did that go?
Well, that was the stress point. It dissolved, broke. You know,
I just turned to powder.
I'm going to come up with, you're giving me questions, I'm going to come up with answers that are going to be like, well, possibly this, possibly that. So, I mean, I don't have the...
I'm just observing all of the evidence. We're not going to jump to any conclusion yet. Just going to look at, take in all this evidence that must be explained by whatever conclusion
right.
you come up with. And then figure F, you have some guy climbing into his basement with a puddle at the bottom of the basement. That's the basement of WTC-2.
Right.
And it's a wet puddle down there. And that supposedly was where we had molten metal. It doesn't make sense that you've got a puddle of water down there. It's like cold air.
Broken water line? I don't know. You know.
But you can't have molten metal unless you have a steam explosion.
Well, I can't say that section of this picture with that water, you know, okay, there's no molten metal there, but I can't say that means I can blanket it across the whole area.
Oh, but this particular location is where those thermal maps supposedly show it being the hottest. And I'm just saying those thermal maps don't agree with the pictorial evidence.
Well, I can't argue. I'd have to just take your word on that since I don't have an overlay of the thermal map on that exact area. So, okay.
All right. Now skip down to, you've seen the billiard ball charts about why the timing just doesn't work for pancake collapse. But at the bottom of that, there's some images of, like, figure 18, 19, and 20 of, you know, what we had beforehand. And then this topographic map of...
Well, the pancake thing, I think all would agree who don't agree with the main theory, the pancake thing did not happen.
Correct.
So I don't think that may be contention with the general public, but not with the people who
agree with
this 9/11 truth.
Okay. I'm speaking of the three images I have at the bottom of the pancake section.
Right.
You have this basement that stayed relatively intact. The destruction only went down to approximately ground level. Except for, you know, some holes in the street and other holes around. What was interesting is building 4, it just disappeared. It's gone. The main body of building 4, and only the north wing is left, and it looks just kind of sliced off. Then we have the picture hoisting out one of the PATH train cars. It doesn't look like it has a scratch on it. In February when they dug down to that level. And the bathtub was not damaged significantly. There's more damage that occurred from earthworm equipment following 9/11 than what occurred on 9/11, which is pretty peculiar because you supposedly have two 500,000-ton buildings slamming to the ground. They don't cause much damage, but earthworm equipment does. Which is kind of odd.
Well, if I can comment at this point, as we're going down this, I'm seeing a pattern here as you're bringing up a lot of questions, which are fine, but you are looking at the other theories that don't explain them. I'm assuming you're going to be able to explain this at the end.
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes. It's important to look at the data rather than somebody jumps to the answer than they don't understand.
I understand, because there are people who tend to punch holes in other people's stuff and then go home. And that's okay because, you know, they shouldn't have hole punched in.
Oh, definitely not that. I'm just noticing here's a piece of evidence, and it needs to be explained. But here's, you know, other theories don't explain this piece of evidence. But if you, okay, now you see these diagrams I have of the King Dome, relative to Building 7 and Tower 1?
Right. Hold on, I'm a couple things at once here. Okay. Building, what figure is that?
Figure 24.
Okay, there we go. Yeah, gotcha.
Okay. Now, the second row, figure 24B, that second row of figures, is the equivalent seismic impact made by those buildings relative to the kingdom, where the first row is their actual size.
Okay.
So if you had, you know, lower 2.6 stories of Building 7 and dropped it to the ground, you'd make the same relative impact as compared to the kingdom.
Well, now here's what I would say is that to me, if the building was blowing apart as it went down, you would not have the same impact of the 110 floors, because the 110 floors isn't hitting the ground. There's a lot of powder and debris being blown around. I don't know what. We'll say a two-block radius. I don't know what the radius is. And so, therefore, I could see where it wouldn't have the seismic impact of a whole building hitting the ground at once. You know what
Correct.
I'm saying?
Correct. Okay. Correct. And this demonstrates that the majority of the building was turned to powder.
Right. Well, I'm going to agree with the concept that the building was, would you say, dustified, powderized? I mean, I would agree with that. It's just, mm-hmm. I guess, the method is what we're getting to.
Okay.
I'm stuttering here because I got a bunch of people sending in questions that are best asked as we go along, rather than have you jump around
okay.
asking me questions. So I'm kind of filing them so that I don't lose them.
Okay. And then there's this lathering up procedure that you see, where you know, the building looks like it's just, you know, turning to dust as it stands.
Right.
It, you know, turning into cotton candy or something.
One of my comments when people talk about demolition is that even if you look at Building 7, all the demolitions that I've ever seen were never like this. The building collapsed into its footprint. This one melted, powderized on the way down, which is very unique.
I believe Building 7 it appears that it was disintegrating all afternoon. And when I submitted my comments to NIST about Building 7, you know, remember how they used the silent destruction as a reason to rule out bombs in the building?
Right.
It also rules out their own explanation.
Well, that's true, because you'd hear the boom, boom, boom of all the
think of a dump truck, Big Mac dump truck, about 10,000 about 20,000 pounds, let's say 10 tons. So it's the equivalent of 20,000 of those dump trucks spread throughout space being dropped to the ground. Something.
Okay, hold on there. We're going to hold there, take a break, and come back and continue talking
okay.
with Dr. Judy Wood. People are asking for the link. It's drjudywood.com/WTC, and as you scroll down, you'll see the figure numbers to keep up. To it. It's all laid out here. So we'll be back to continue live right after this. All right, we are back talking with Dr. Judy Wood. For those listening, drjudywood.com/WTC. That is the paper, the page we're going through. You can follow down as we follow the bouncing ball, so to speak, as we go through this to find out about Dr. Judy's explanations for the building, falling? How do you want to say it? Disappearance?
Destruction.
There you go. Okay, good word. Now, I want to say something before we continue on. One of my premises is that we don't have an example of 110-foot building falling. Building falling to compare against. So virtually everything we're talking about here is going to be theory, is that maybe some theories have better rooted in the data or explain the data than others, but we don't know what a 110-story building looks like when it falls. We don't know.
We don't have just theories. We have evidence here. This is physical evidence.
Right, but the explanation for the odd behavior of the matter falling or spreading, I followed the space program for a while when I was a kid, all through my teens and early 20s. And one of the things that struck me very important and I learned was that they had planned exactly where the Saturn rings would be. And when they got there to actually see it with a probe, it wasn't where they planned. And that struck me as important. It's like we can always talk about where we think they are mathematically, scientifically, theoretically, but when you get out into nature and actually see it, well, a lot of times we've got to go scratch our heads and reformulate things.
Well, so far we're just looking at evidence.
Right.
And I'd like to stress that this is evidence, physical evidence.
Right. Okay.
And, we're covering the seismograph issues, which is, it should have been like raining dump trucks. It wouldn't be whisper quiet if you have any kind of solids slamming through the ground.
Let me ask you, on that number, and not being familiar with the formulas, if it literally rained dump trucks, would that have changed the number, or does it have to have a big sledgehammer of a building to make the number go up? What if it was a bunch of packets hitting at different times?
How fine of material? You have material falling. If it went as they claimed, you would have material falling some distance. It would slam to the pavement, or slam onto a pile of something. If the building goes away in under 10 seconds, then it comes down very quickly. Then it should be by definition slamming to the ground.
Right. Okay. All right. I just wondering that if that number would be higher if one big hammer hit it, and it'd be lower if a bunch of packets hit it.
Well, it's the energy of the area under the curve. A certain level of energy for some time period, or a whole lot for a smaller time period.
Right. Okay.
You should have account for what hits the ground. And the fact is, the seismographic information, it contradicts a building hitting the ground.
At least I would say the one that's most, what sticks out to me is the WT7 being, appears to have more size and mass than the King Dome, being quite a bit less.
Correct. It's just a fraction. It was, whisper quiet. If you look at the seismographs, it's like barely above background noise, if that even.
That is very, that's very odd. And I would have liked to have had, perhaps in this figure, if you had the data, other buildings as similar as one could have during a demolition and have the seismographs for those. That would have been a good comparison.
Right. There's a whole lot of information, too. Other information as well. Moving on to the dustification section.
Okay.
Again, my favorite pictures I end up naming so I can refer to them easily,
right.
Like
okay.
The bubbler. You see the material shooting up and out.
Yes.
And the snowball picture, which is very striking because you're missing two-thirds of the building, and then the lower third is still intact. Where's the two-thirds of the building gone? This is when WTC-2 is on its way down or going away. It's sort of amazing that the buildings, the material can't be accounted for very easily. And then there's the satellite image of the stuff going into the upper atmosphere. What stuff is that? If you look carefully at that picture, you might want to click to blow it up. You have black-looking stuff that goes over the Hudson or kind of goes directly up, and the white stuff goes south.
Right. Well, I guess they're both going south, but the black goes a little bit to the west and then...
It's a very different behavior because of the color. It's like two different phenomena going on there.
Yeah. Okay.
And then figure 31A, we call this the shaving cream or Alka-Seltzer, you can see the beam just dissolving. And it's not hitting anything. So where does the resistance come from? There's something else happening to it. It can't be explained by... something by slam against anything. Also, if you set off a bomb, chunks go flying, and they stay chunks until they hit something.
Right. And one of the things that I find to this moment in your addressing is it seemed to pulverize, and I don't see. I mean, again, I'm not an expert, but I don't see to my own personal knowledge and comfort of what I know about science and physics, which is not. It's peripheral, it's not,
right.
Is that I don't see the explosion to pulverize. But then again, I don't know what this material acts like when it's being blown up 100 stories in the air. I don't know all of that. But I will say it does look odd.
You can sense
my conservatism, but not in a...
Sorry, that's fine.
Okay, all right, fine. There's no axe to grind here. I'm just not going to just...
We just jump to any conclusion. We're just making notes along the way.
Okay.
And so figure 33 is you have this remaining set of core columns that are standing that turn to dust. What is so striking about this is that it's much taller than Building 7, which is 47 stories. So it's approximately 70 stories tall, these columns that are just sticking up there unsupported. They have to be rigid and strong in order to support their own weight for those few seconds. If they, tipped over, they're going to take out a few city blocks of buildings.
Now, is it possible that this material, which was, as I understand it, not made as a direct supporting material, a facing, we'll call it, that may have supportive characteristics, but it wasn't meant to hold the building up, in other words. Is it possible?
Which are you speaking of? The building was supported by the inner columns
right.
and the outer columns.
I got the impression that the outer columns were, it would be like putting elastic clothes on. Your body does the work, but if you didn't have skin, you'd have trouble, but your skin's not holding up your body.
It's like two sawhorses with each floor was strung between the two sawhorses, one being the inner column, one being the outer column.
And the outside, I got the impression, was it wasn't meant to hold. What I'm getting at, is it possible that when this piece was standing there, the weight of itself not ever meant to be that high and that tall?
First of all, these are the inner columns that turned to dust. Those aren't the outer columns.
These are the heavy steel.
These big box beams, 18 inches by 24
okay,
inches.
Because I, from looking at this picture, I would have assumed it was that lattice-type looking on the outside.
There's plenty of other pictures of it, and these are inner columns.
Okay.
But still, the floors were suspended, were connected to the inner column and the outer column, one at each end. So they're done. So even if they fell, you should still have the inner columns and outer columns.
Okay, all right, so I see your caption. I was looking at the picture. These aren't the I'm calling it the lattice outside. This is something inside.
Correct.
Okay.
Then let's look at the lather. This heavy stuff that's pouring out of just one face of the building.
Which one? What figure is this?
The row of 34, 35, 36, and 37.
Right.
What's interesting about figure 35 is building 7 and building 1 are lathering up at the same time.
All right, building 7, okay.
And which is peculiar because they claim that building 7 was damaged when 1 went poof.
Okay, I got you. Okay.
And that can't be the case because, it's lathering up at the same time. 1 is still standing. So what's building 7 doing?
Okay.
I call this lather. It's a thick stuff, but it just comes out of one side of the building, which is peculiar. And figure 38 shows another interesting phenomenon, these smoke rings, I call them, it, poofing out. So it looks like these buildings are doing something ahead of time, ahead of their actual moment of demise.
Now, I'm just going to throw this out here. Do you, knowing the concept of the ray or weapon, is it possible that this information, this is already in the process of cooking, or however you would say it?
Yes, there's something already happening to it.
Okay, gotcha.
Like it's dissolving or something. That's, I think, actual parts of the building blowing away. All right, then we come to the toasted car section, which I think...
Yeah, and that I'll tell you, when I went through your site, that was something that interested me because I've never heard this mentioned anywhere.
Right.
So I already got a bunch of questions for you.
check out 40B.
SRF.
You got this circular spot on the back door of this police car. Now go ahead and click that one and make a bigger picture out of it.
All right. Okay.
it's like the paint's kind of warped up or bubbled up in the door. And it's got this circular spot, like it had a template, you know, preserving one part of it.
Right, okay.
This one is the first one that got my attention. Went, wait a minute, how can something happen that one spot and then a millimeter over not happen? You have this black stuff and, you know, it's this discrete boundary. That's when I got to thinking about energy beams.
Now, if I can, before we move on, I have some questions on the cars, because that's very, very strange. That now, first thing I thought of was, after seeing your diagram of it being along, was it FDR Drive or whatever it is?
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that those cars were towed there?
It's possible, but unlikely, and because there's some cars there that they're just still covered with, you know, the dust and stuff.
I saw the dust. Later. I thought perhaps maybe the dust took a while. But even if they weren't, if they were towed or not towed there, it's like
they're still damaged.
Yeah, what mechanism would cause this? I mean, that's very anomalous. I looked at that. I said, "There's not, you know, what could cause this?" That was the really the biggest that I found looking.
And that the inside of the car is totally like torch looking.
That's a serious fire. I mean, it's amazingly serious fire.
It appears to be a fire.
Okay, well, a burn.
Yeah. Yeah,
let's put that
and the back is still has a nice new wax job on the outside of the car. And I suspect it still has its gas tank intact. Now, why I say it appears to be a fire, that's another thing. Let me specify about my odd language.
Okay.
If this is a psyops, and we want to be able to see around it, we need to keep from being biased. So my way of doing that is to come up with new terms for phenomena that we don't exactly know.
Okay.
If you call it this fire or whatever, you're thinking automatically of heat, you're thinking automatically of, you know, regular hydrocarbon fires and whatnot. But if you just, you know, give another label to that phenomena, right, that's why I use toasted. It doesn't necessarily mean heat. It's toast. It's history. You know, so somebody talks about the computer's motherboard being toast.
Right.
This car isn't drivable anymore.
Yes.
Toast.
Right. And it is very, very interesting way, a very odd patterns of toasting.
Yes. And some things, you know, and not other things. Like there's one where the roof was kind of blistered up, but the plastic lining inside the door wasn't. You know, it wasn't affected. But, you know, some things are affected and some things aren't. So we just noticed this, and I started noticing also that door latches seem to be released, or trunk lids popped open. Like it eats, you know, trunk latches and door handles sooner than other parts. And it also eats engine blocks sooner. You notice figure 42, the car on the very right side of the picture?
Right, well, yes.
It perhaps doesn't have an engine block in it. There are some where you can see the engine block's missing.
Now, these look clearly like they were where they were found. I mean, it looks like these things were, like, right there. Now, the question that already came up is, what happened to the people in there? Why isn't there any bodies? I mean, the parked cars, you can assume they're parked, okay? But there's...
That minivan driving down the middle of the street, yeah, you wonder if they bailed out in time.
Right. And what did they bail out from? I mean, was that powder cloud that was coming, like a million degrees or something? Or
it could have happened beforehand. I've seen some videos where the cars look like they're spontaneously combusting. They're just sitting there, and then suddenly they get these flame-looking things coming out of them.
It does seem that there is a pattern. On the bus, anyway, that kind of has the flow, if you will, of it's kind of pointing to like 1 or 2 o'clock, we'll say.
The other end of the bus is pictures of this. Looks like plastic in the top corners, and it looks like it kind of blew up and then popped and deflated. This is maybe what it looks like, but some pretty strange things.
Right.
Okay, windows, marble.
I think I got a question more about the car. I'm trying to. Kind of all the people in the cars, okay. All right, we're done with the cars. We got other stuff, but I can wait.
Okay. Look at the windows and the marble. In figure 43, we have the marble facade around the entryway. This is WFC1. Right. It's gone completely. But there's no, I call them stab wounds, in the building. There's, you know, problems with the windows. The windows and the marble are all that's affected.
And now the, is there, I can't see with the equipment in a way, but it doesn't appear to have debris from the marble that was on that facade.
Correct. It looks like it just turned to powder. And there's some pictures from the underground mall with the same thing. The marble seems to just go away. Now, these windows get mighty interesting. Like, look at figure 47. Those are round holes in those windows. Yeah, I throw a baseball through a window and it leaves a spider web pattern. How do you get a round hole? Or round cutouts?
It doesn't appear to have a rock laying in the debris there that fell through.
It's not, you know, some chunks of glass, but other places are all just like pulverized. And like figure 48, that's the Millennium Hotel. Now, what turned that white? And it looks like somebody got a soldering iron and just, you know, poked holes in the window and melted out holes.
All right.
And nothing seemed to fly through. The Swiss cheese truck in figure 49 is kind of
interesting. If you look at again, not being a physicist, looking at the holes, I wonder if there wasn't a... you know, since the glass moves in and out with the prayer pressure, that if there was a structural break in the glass as it was bowing out, if you will, if that would create more of a circular break?
It wouldn't be a circular thing like that, especially if it's a rectangular window. It would have, you know, cracks going back to corners.
No, it does show that one of the circles are near the corner. Some are in the middle, but there's one on the one on the far right is definitely on the end.
Yeah, they're by the edge.
All right, well, you know, I'm just throwing stuff out there.
Right, right. Now, figure 53 is interesting because we have double-paned windows where only the outer pane is missing. So it wasn't like a stab wound.
Yeah, I see.
And then the banker's truss is pretty interesting. These, you know, lacy-looking windows like figure 59, 60, 61, those close-ups.
Right, 59, 60, okay.
Those holes are like, you know, they don't break the whole window. It's just like holes in the window. Oblong shape, just, you know, weird shapes.
All right, well, this, you know, for what it's worth, this doesn't really do anything for me. I mean, I could be just the way things
well,
fell. Or...
These holes are consistent with longitudinal waves.
Okay, well, then it may, you know.
Okay, now we're going to get down to the fuzzball section.
All right.
This is a big picture for me. Figure 62. I call it the fuzzball intersection.
Ready?
This is about a block north of the WTC complex. We're looking west about 15 minutes or so after WTC 1 went poof.
Right.
And you see kind of a clear blue sky there because we're upwind.
Right.
That's a toasted parking lot off in the distance. But if you look real carefully around the feet of some of the officers, you can see it looks fuzzy.
Well, they're walking in dust?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is 15 minutes after the dust landed. How did the dust that fine land that quickly?
That does seem kind of quick. I mean, I'll just assume your 15 minutes is correct, and it does.
This picture is between the destruction of 1 and 2 showing such things. So, you know, that really puts a time limit on it. Now go down to figure 63, 64, 65, and so forth. You know, folks will say, is this, you know, molten metal under the sidewalk? I don't think so. Especially 64, that's a, you know, really good example of what I call fuzzballs. It's that the stuff gets stirred up when people walk through it.
Right, right. That's what I would imagine is doing it.
But then pretty soon it starts stirring up all on its own. If you look at figure 67, off in the distance you see it starting to rise up all by itself.
Wind?
Not in that spot. Wind was like 5 miles an hour in that day. If there was wind, why would it have settled out?
Well, I'm just wind comes and goes. I'm just throwing out stuff out there. I mean,
So this is something that went relatively quickly. And then they, of course, started scrubbing the streets and cleaning it up as fast as they could. Because you can't have this fuming coming up from the streets because it looks kind of obvious. Like that figure 64 and 65, that looks strange. People are going to start asking questions. So coincidentally, this scrubbing of the streets, and it looked like they even cleaned the streets with a toothbrush in some of those grooves. A whole lot of cleaning, and that street cleaning started on the afternoon of 9/11.
All right, well, hold on. We're going to start. We're at the street scrubbing section on the page.
Okay.
DrJudyWood.com/WTC for those listening to follow along. And figure 68 is where we're at, and we will be back after the break to continue finding out what mechanism brought down the buildings. We are talking with Dr. Judy Wood about the destruction of the World Trade Center buildings. DrJudyWood.com. And if you are listening and you are not doing this, I'd recommend going DrJudyWood.com/WTC and follow along with the bouncing ball. We're on figure 68. And welcome back, Dr. Judy.
Hey, thanks.
All right, we're
looking at this clean construction site. Cleanest one I've ever seen.
Yeah, I was thinking about it. I was kind of looking ahead, and I was watching the stuff, and I'm thinking, like, well, okay, you're not going to get me with the cleaning. Of course they're going to clean it up, but I don't know what they cleaned up too fast.
So beginning the afternoon of 9/11, you would think you'd want to leave room for rescue vehicles to get in and out instead of, cluttering the road with street cleaners.
Well, I guess on a side note that there was probably a lot of asbestos around there, too, that they didn't want to tell anybody about.
It could be an assumption, but figure 68, you can see that, it's right immediately afterwards, you guys had a street cleaner go down the street already.
Well, unless he happened to be there already, but yeah.
Okay. Right, okay. Yeah. He's called up. All right, then we can move on to the dirt section, lots of dirt. Figure 74 was taken 2 days after 9/11, and you see piles of dirt just, plop down. It didn't fall from the sky. It's neatly dumped, like somebody brought in a wheelbarrow full and dumped it.
Yeah, it does look like that, yeah.
Figure 73, it looks like nice potting soil. So with all the street scrubbing going on, if you have the lawns fuming, whatever it is rising from the lawns, that looks kind of bad. So,
So you say that may have been dumped there to put out...
fuming.
Fuming, okay, there you go.
And this is directly across the street. Figure 73 is directly across the street from Building 1. So it would have had a lot going on there.
And this is when? I mean, is this possible that they dug this stuff out of the ground with the machines and dumped it?
Immediately, that afternoon and, the day after.
Right, because maybe they were starting to dig out, the rubble and just throwing it down and dirt comes with it.
Like the stuff in figure 73 looks like fresh potting soil. And what you have in front of there is just a roadway. So it's kind of weird that you'd have dirt there. But then we have dirt trucks coming into town lined up. You see those pictures, figure 76, 77. And then they're taking dirt out, figure 78.
Well, I mean, I guess it could. To me, I drive on the highways a lot. That, to me, it looks like it's blacktop. Trucks with blacktop in it.
Well, they have tarps over it.
But
why would they be bringing it into the complex?
Well, I don't know. They're bringing it to the complex. Perhaps they were already doing something. I mean, I don't know. You're asking me. I don't know, but I'm just.
They're about a block north of the complex, and they're driving south on West Street.
Okay.
And the trucks. Most interesting one is figure 79. That's the remaining, quote, pile of Building 7. Since when does a 47-story building, fall into a pile and turn into a pile of dirt? It's the mud pie.
You already kind of said this. The significance of the dirt would be to perhaps put out smoking, fuming?
I think there's a sponge to soak up,
okay,
you know, something.
That just came in my thing here, and I wanted to ask that since we're on the subject. Okay, go ahead.
I just
lost the page.
In your garage, when you have an oil spill, you put down kitty litter to soak up the oil.
Right.
It'll spill. It's a way of removing toxic materials to soak it up like a sponge. Then we have this instant rustification. We're in the rustification section. That, you know, immediately afterwards, things, steel that normally doesn't, you know, rust in 1 hour's time, rusts as though it's iron. If you get an iron skillet, scrub it clean with alcohol or acetone, or, you know, dishwashing detergent, and then make sure it's clean, then put it in the sink and fill it with water. I think you know there's going to be bright orange rust in no time at all. But
right.
Steel
Let me,
does not rust like that.
Right. I ended up having the window close, and I went, what number are we at again? I had to catch up here.
Oh, figure 80?
Or
you can just jump down to section K, rustification.
Figure 80, there we go. Okay, there's the orange.
So it looks like it was spray painted. And
yeah, it's
the front of that Pepsi truck. Uniform rust instantly.
Yeah.
And iron rusts like that, but steel doesn't. And also structural steel has various other components in it, in addition to iron, that make it, you know, increase its structural properties as well as make it resistant to rust and deterioration.
And I've seen cars rust with flames, but I guess it's pretty fast to be rusting that quickly.
Yeah, it might look like creeping crud or something, but yeah, this is like in an hour's time type of thing.
All right, I'm just going to take your face value about the timing on it.
There's some things that are quicker than others, and you know, more we can get into the details on that. They're in my subsequent pages.
Okay.
Then look at figures 87 and 88. Those are in Banker's Trust. First of all, they repaired Banker's Trust. Remember that big gash in the front? They repaired it and then started taking it apart. Why would you repair a building you're going to take apart unless you decide to take it apart after you repaired it and saw that there's a problem?
Oh, yeah, maybe they saw the structure wasn't sound.
But why fix it to begin with?
They didn't know until then? I don't know.
Right, yeah.
I don't know the answer.
It's peculiar. Okay, then they get down to this place where there's this, you know, super rusty beam that looks like it's been at the bottom of the ocean for 100 years.
Right, right.
You see that the pattern of it, it's that same area that had been replaced.
Right.
For the new beams, it's pretty strange. Now we go down to the weird fires section.
Yeah.
That first image, it's interesting how the fires are perpendicular to that foil. That was
now, what is this first image? This is what?
EVOs, exotic vacuum objects.
Okay.
Something is done in someone's lab.
Okay.
And it's a piece of tin foil. So it's not like something's burning like normal.
Right.
There's something else weird going on there. If you look at figure 91 and 92, the firewalker firefighter.
Yeah.
He's not worried about catching his pants on fire. And why is he choosing to walk through the fire instead of around it and doesn't seem to be concerned with it?
They got fireproof pants? I don't know.
And it's not putting off smoke that you can tell. And
well, I mean,
paper sitting adjacent to it. It's not burning.
All right.
Which seems kind of peculiar that the paper doesn't catch fire.
Well, it is a freeze frame in time. Maybe it did.
Well, if you go down to the paper section just below that, there's plenty of examples of paper not burning where, you know, you had this orange stuff, whatever it was. I need to come up with a better term for it. But it appears to be fire, this luminescence.
Yeah.
Okay, we hear talk about molten metal and high heat.
Right, there's questions that got stacked up about that.
Okay, there's figure 99 shows this cloud chase scene, and I think we all remember seeing pictures like that.
Yeah.
But after the cloud rolled past, the people are still alive and they're just covered with dust.
Right.
And gagging or whatnot, but they didn't get toasted.
Right.
And then, of course, Figure 98, where they climbed down into the basement to that puddle. And then Figure 101 and 102, that was the afternoon of 9/11. There was a broken water main, and the street turned into like a lake.
Right.
No steam explosions. You cannot have molten metal at the bottom of the swimming pool.
Right. This is not in the bottom of the building, though.
Correct. But you also had, you know, water hoses on things. It also rained. And you didn't have steam explosions. If you had molten metal and you dump water on it, wherever, you know, if molten metal is down below and the water eventually runs to it, you would have a steam explosion. Because when water turns into steam, it expands in volume by 1,600 times.
Right.
And rapid expansion is an explosion. And that's what happened at Chernobyl. It was a steam explosion. So the fact they're hosing down, you know, this pile, and actually the water seems to silence this fuming or lessen it. I've got this little video clip there.
Let's watch that now.
All right. It's a kid setting off some thermite sitting on a block of ice, and you get a steam explosion.
Because of the real high temperature right on the real cold temperature.
Right, or right on water.
Ice. Yeah, right. Ice.
As soon as it...
All right. I see we're getting down to the 104. This is what people have been talking about in the chat room. They've been talking about the molten steel.
Well, if it's molten, the digger can't pick it up. If glowing...
Glowing, okay.
Okay, let's look at other piece of evidence in the picture. These are hydraulics. Look at that nice control arm. And the thing, you know, we assume it's not permanently damaged like all the rest of the equipment, like the Figure 107. You know, you get a lot of these, Figure 106 and 108. Those the hydraulic equipment, we didn't hear about them having to replace them every 2 hours or every 5 minutes. And they could only go up to 100 degrees or 180, I'm sorry, I'm mixing units here, 82 degrees centigrade or like 180 Fahrenheit. It was below boiling temperature.
Well, wouldn't the atmosphere above it, if it was contained underneath the rubble, the major part of the heat would still be contained in under the rubble until they opened it up?
But how could it be contained, you know, if it's, you get water, you know, pouring down on it, and if it
there
supposedly
like
is as hot as that digger that's digging it up?
Yeah.
It's the thermal conductivity that would affect the hydraulics. The hydraulics are connected to those jaws. That's how come the jaws work.
Right.
And if you have something, if that were 2,800 degrees Fahrenheit, don't you think it would be over 150 Fahrenheit, you know, an inch from there?
I would imagine it'd be pretty hot.
Right. Like, you know, why do you use those padded gloves when you flip burgers on the grill?
I mean, we will just assume that the hydraulic stuff will respond thermatically, if that's as you say.
Right, it'll freeze up. It's just like your car engine. You can't run it when it's real hot. Nor do you water it down to cool it off because you crack your engine block.
Okay.
So the control arm of hydraulics is like similar to the pistons in your car. You know, they're designed for a certain operating
system. Okay. Okay.
So we see this thing glowing. We've been, you know, folks have been assuming that it's hot, but we do know it's glowing. At first, I thought this might be a fake picture, but then I started realizing, you know, the phenomenon might be that this glows without heating.
Okay.
And you see the grilled cheese sandwich on the left, 103?
Well, you know, isn't that something, wouldn't somebody mention something like that? I mean, that's something that might be leaked out. You know, we got people saying there was explosions in the building that come out, and you would think the guy's like, yeah, you know, I got this stuff. It was glowing, but it wasn't hot.
Folks are traumatized, and they have questions. As soon as they're given answers, They quit asking questions. That's human nature.
That's true. That's true.
And so if you give people the answers, then they just don't ask.
Yeah, plus, you know, you're the focus is on the whole event that happened. I mean, you can do a lot of sleight of hand during that.
Right, right. And people just, you know, immediately follow along. Like when the police yell, get down on the ground, get down on the ground. Everybody gets on the ground. They don't say why. they just do it. It's, you know, the fear factor. Okay, so in figure 106, 107, 108, there's this fuming coming up from the ground, but you have people walking through it. And they don't look like steam clams. In figure 107, so we know that's not hot, because people can't survive more than so many degrees. Oh, it's interesting. We hear this story about the steel-toed boots are melting. Well, maybe the steel-toed boots are coming apart, and they were told they're melting.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Because we don't have any reports whatsoever of burned feet inside those boots.
Okay.
You know, if your oven is so many degrees, you know, the turkey gets cooked inside.
Right.
All right, toilets. There should be something like, you know, close to 3,000 toilets. We didn't see a one.
Well,
nothing recognizable as part of a toilet or a sink.
I'm assuming then that in the explanation there's something to do with ceramic.
Yeah, like marble.
Yeah, okay.
Like marble facade. And it's also this issue of the, you know, I call them turbo toilets, the pressurized air tanks that help reduce water consumption.
Right.
It gets you thinking about these pressurized tanks. If they start to dissolve, the wall of the pressure vessel is going to become thin enough at some point that it's no longer going to hold the pressure and it'll explode.
Right.
So you have pressurized tanks that can explode. And speaking on that, we come to the Scott packs.
Right.
And there's testimony of some of the first responders' testimonies of these Scott packs that were exploding, sitting in the fire trucks at ground level.
What is a Scott pack?
There's a picture of one there. It's the oxygen bottles that the firefighters wear.
Oh, okay. All right, I got you. There we go.
So they can breathe when they go into smoky environments. They had, you know, a bunch of extra ones on their fire trucks, and they're all exploding.
All right.
And, left and right, they were all blowing up left and right.
Right.
It's kind of interesting. This guy's fire truck actually blew up. That was an interesting statement. Like, was your vehicle destroyed? Huh? Was it on fire? What? Was it on fire? Fire? We saw the sucker blow up. We heard a boom. Okay, then we have fuming. We've seen some of that before.
Okay.
Where figure 117 and 118. Here's this dirt that's been brought in. And the dirt is saturated with water, yet there's still fumes coming out of it.
Oh, you know what? I did notice something, and I forgot to mention at the break. I noticed a picture with a couple of people with really red faces.
Yes, that's something else I noticed, too.
Red. Like, do they have skin
on? Like all their capillaries were burst.
Yeah, I mean, it really, really, really bad.
That seemed to be a common theme that I've seen as well.
Okay.
Fuzzy blobs. The figure 121, there's a lot of interesting things going on there. You see these, like, right back behind the water cooler, you see kind of a fuzzy blob, and there's some, you see them around various other places. You see a guy holding his nose, and then somebody who's kind of keeled over down there at in the bottom.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the fuzzy blobs.
If you look right behind the water cooler.
Water cooler. Okay, the little wispy type of thing, like smoky type thing?
Yeah.
Okay,
gotcha. Haze, and there's one on the left side as well. And then you start noticing different ones around. It's like a little cloud of something that's moving around, doing something weird. And you see on the far right, there's a guy holding his nose.
Right.
Another one running to the cooler. It's like there's something that is toxic about it.
Right.
And when you continue down, the rolled up carpet appearance is what I call this phenomenon. The outer columns of the tower support part of the weight of the floors. You can see how the floors were bolted between the outer columns and the inner columns. If there was too much weight and the wall became unstable, it would buckle. But if it buckles, it's going to bend around a horizontal axis. As you can see in figure 127, and one in 126. That's how you'd expect the bending to happen. But in figure 128, it bent around the wrong axis. So the beams are, the columns are still straight.
Yeah, I see.
It rolled up like a rolled up carpet.
Yeah, kind of twisted.
Yeah, curled up around the spandrel plates. But the columns are still straight. So did they really buckle? And also figure 125, you know, those columns are straight, but the spandrel plate is like draped like tissue paper over it.
Right.
So the force for buckling, it didn't look like he suffered that. So what happened to him? And then we have the Swiss cheese section, tissue paper and tortilla chips. Yeah, figure 129, if you look at those columns sticking up kind of a weird angle, it looks like the column's been torn into shreds like tissue paper.
Yeah.
And so it was softened, yet ripped apart and resolidified. And I think we've all seen the figure 130.
From that particular picture, I can see where the Hutchinson effect comes in. I've had him on the show for a long interview.
Uh-huh. So you're seeing the connection?
Yeah, I can see. I can't say it exclusively, but I've seen his metal all jellified and twisted and stuff. So,
well, mind you, up to this point, I had just been, you know, listing pieces of evidence, different phenomena, and then I came upon the Hutchinson effect and went, "Wow, one-to-one correlation with everything, including this mysterious parking problem." I got figure 132. You notice in front of the WFC1 building, you have two vehicles parked there. The one in front of the SUV is parked upside down.
Right.
Why is it parked upside down?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, the pressure wave knocked it over. I don't know.
It's interesting, this fence-sitting car in figure 133, that's from a tornado. And the car is not scratched up or dinged up. It just looks like it got set there. Kind of interesting. Then figure 134 is more cars upside down. But notice the trees have their leaves on them.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I don't know how far they are. But it's true. Yeah.
Some interesting things about figure 135, 6, and 7 from Hurricane Andrew.
Yeah, this is a site issue, or maybe it is related. I've always thought that the things during hurricanes and tornadoes wasn't the speed of the wind, but some kind of a space-time vortex that happens at that high energy or something.
I think you're onto something there. And then figure 138 through 9, 140, we've seen this, what they call the meteorite, and it's only one file cabinet remaining from everything, and it has colored folders in it, like it wasn't heated, because those didn't get burned up. And then we have the Hutchinson effect, where it has dissimilar materials that are fused together. Piece of wood embedded in aluminum,
yeah.
And this is the butter knife picture, and there's some other interesting from where the aluminum just peeled open.
Right.
And a year earlier, I'd seen this peeling effect in the toasted cars. And then for the first time, I recognized, there is something to that. You see in figure 154, this police truck on the door of it, it's like it's delaminated, but it's not made out of laminated steel. Why would it?
What number is this now? Oh, down here, yeah, okay.
154.
Okay.
And then 155 and 156, we have these weird fires. One on the left is John Hutchison's. The one on the right is a parking lot across from WTC3 before either tower went poof. This weird fire cropped up and jumped around and ran over several cars.
Yeah, so he did have a thing with the Ark of the Covenant, and I noticed there was these weird little fire things that almost looked like faces. They were kind of dancing around in there. Huh?
Yeah.
All right, well, if we can hold there, we're going to have to stop for this break.
Okay.
We're coming into the last lap here. We're going to get into, we're starting to, I guess, get into the mechanism here.
Yep.
Okay, all right, hold on. And we'll come back. I got, some of the questions here are lined up, but it's pretty good flow here. I'd rather not just jump around. So we're going to keep on keeping on. We'll be back right after the break, Feet to the Fire, with Dr. Judy Wood about the demolition, or actually the destruction of the towers. And we'll be right back after this. All right, we are back with Dr. Judy Wood, drjudywood.com, WTC/WTC. We're down to, 155 or so, no, more than that.
Well, figure 159.
159, there we go.
And that figure 159 is one of John's samples, John okay. Hutchison's samples, a curved solid copper beam. It's about 2 or 3 inches in diameter. And on the right, figure 160 is from the WTC, a curved beam. I think we've seen that horseshoe-shaped beam. It's not crackled. It doesn't look gripped. It doesn't...
Yeah, you would think if it would have been bent by simple, like, weight bending it, there'd be a little more distress.
Yeah, there'd be a crease in it.
Yeah. Yep.
And figure 163 is particularly worth noting. That was in that gash of Banker's Trust. And you see it sticking out in the middle. There's a close-up of that beam right below it. It has Swiss cheese holes in it, and it's crinkled up. That's not from loading. And it was stated that there's absolutely no fire in the Banker's Trust. That was in the FEMA report. So there's no fire in this building. What caused that beam to crinkle up like that? It looks like a piece of plastic, you know, somebody sticks in the fire or pours gasoline on it. It shouldn't crinkle up that way. There's some more pictures that we can skip over. Well, figure 167 might be worth noting. Look at the right-hand side of the picture, which is the north wall of WFC2.
Okay.
It looks like a fish tank. Like it's out of phase.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty weird looking.
Is that at that moment, or was that like that afterwards for hours?
That was the picture was taken sometime late in the afternoon, before Building 7, just before Building 7 went poof.
That does look weird.
And as we go down further, the figure 170. I saw that, and I decided I wanted some better pictures of that dust cloud going in the upper atmosphere, so I went looking for weather satellite pictures. And lo and behold, I find this hurricane right outside New York City on the morning of 9/11. And it wasn't on the morning news, which is interesting, because for 4 days it was aimed straight to New York. Yeah, yes, there's a cold front that was coming from, you know, the mainland out, but how can they be so sure that it's not going to stall out, that the hurricane is going to stall out there more than X number of hours or minutes, where you'd worry about a storm surge? Because Manhattan's, what, 20 feet above sea level?
Right. It is pretty close. I mean, I'll just take your word on the date and, you know,
and JFK is even lower than that. And it's that morning. Now, figure 174 shows that the wind speed, the pressure, and the location of the hurricane, the closest to New York City in that time zone, and in that for that 24-hour period of time, and everything just it held a constant there.
Yeah.
As though it was to make something, you know, uniform about the environment. We don't need to speculate further than that.
Yeah, a flat line is kind of rare in nature.
It's just weird.
Yeah.
And I tried to compare it with other hurricanes, and I couldn't find another one that had that kind of path where it goes straight towards New York and then, you know, puts it reverse and heads out of town.
Well, we've had people like James McKinney on the show here who was convinced and even claims to have been taken part of experiments with controlling the weather, and it's no doubt in his mind that they can move these around.
If you look at figure 171, you'll notice that you got a weird eye in there. It's a pentagon shape, and it looks like it's filled with worms or a maze of hedge.
Yeah, it does look pretty bizarre.
Okay, let's get to the magnetometer section. I got to thinking about how hurricanes look like big Tesla coils, and they create field effects. After all, people with arthritis can feel a storm coming.
Right.
They're sensing something. And it's the surrounding area outside of a hurricane where you get these field effects where you don't have rain. And there's, if you look at figure 189, yeah, there's, at the various airports around Manhattan, it reported.
Sorry, what number? 189, you say?
Yeah, figure 189.
Okay, there we go.
There's thunder and rain reported at the airports all around Manhattan.
Wasn't it relatively clear around there? Around the Trade Center?
Yes, yeah, clear, but you have dry thunder.
Oh, I see.
So in the field effects, look at figure 178. The tornado where you have this high up cloud and you have the ground and it looks like you have a potential between the two.
Right.
For that lightning to arc across. So that there's some difference in the potential between those two places, and you're getting something happening with the field effects.
Right.
Figure 182 is an interesting video showing a tornado go from the ground up. I think tornadoes, it's the same thing. It's a potential between above, the cloud and the ground. Now, there's something even more intriguing. Figure 183 and 184. This is magnetometer readings for in Alaska on the morning of 9/11. We have various vertical lines mark the different events. The vertical lines are drawn based on the official time that the North Tower got its hole, and the South Tower got its hole, and the two buildings went away, or the three buildings went away. The first blue line, if you notice it's been kind of constant for about 4 days there, and then the various readings take a nosedive.
And they go kind of wild, and then they return back
up. And
as
soon as they hit the bottom of that, they head back up. That has happened to me when the North Tower got its hole. And then the red line right after that was when the South Tower got its hole, when they quit going up and go horizontal again.
Yeah.
I think you can definitely see when Tower 1 goes poof, it'll take a nosedive.
Well, I would say that probably thermite wouldn't cause that.
I don't think so. and then they're haywire all afternoon. And look, at they kind of steady out right when Building 7 goes poof.
Yeah.
What I thought was interesting is the North Tower got a hole in it from north to south. The South Tower got a hole in it from south to north. The two towers went top to bottom. Building 7 went bottom to top.
Yeah.
Almost like something trying to balance something out. Just interesting patterns, but this a distinct pattern. As for the regular weather, it's 185, figure 185. You see how the humidity took this linear drop that morning.
Yeah.
From like 7 a.m. until noon. It just the straight linear decline, that pink line.
Yeah. That's quite weird.
And again, the figure 186, you can see, the different events going on in there, but how it kind of tried to normalize, but didn't quite normalize after Building 7 went poof.
That's pretty wild. I also, for the record, I have several streams going. I have quite a bit of almost 2 megs of upload bandwidth to the server, and everything just went haywire. I take it you don't have too many friends.
Correct.
Right.
I'm hitting dead over the target here, I think.
Yeah, well, it's just kind of funny how it happened now. I mean, this is a pretty good system that I work through, and that's pretty weird.
That's the major issues. There's so many string of donuts that need to get developed further, but you see these little these strange paths. It's not a projectile because that makes a smooth path. So this makes more of a path of electrical and magnetic fields. So what questions are left?
Well, I'm trying to look. While I'm looking, do you have some type of how this was delivered? Where did it come from? you know, I mean, I'm familiar with the John Hutchinson stuff, so let's just assume they have a Hutchinson-type deal. How did they do it?
Well, the hurricane is mighty peculiar there. We do know that it creates field effects, and it's my thinking that there's another field of some other type of energy that gets inserted into this. It's an interference of those various fields, or something that happens within this controlled environment. There's testimony of people being lifted up, other like weird pieces of, you know, events going along. But as far as I can tell, you know, remember, I didn't know anything about directed energy weapons before I began looking at the evidence, but the evidence told me they exist. What I mean by directed energy weapons is energy that's directed and used as a weapon. And those circular holes that are punched through Building 6 and in the street and so forth, it's
right.
Pretty well directed. And it's not a kinetic energy device. We didn't see a big hole punch, you know, make that,
right.
Mechanically make that.
So they'd have to have a big power source?
Not necessarily. John Hutchinson doesn't use much power at all. It's how you use the energy.
Well, also, he moved these bars and everything, which is pretty impressive. But it may be a difference between that and a huge building. In talking with him, there was also problems with his building foundation cracking and all that kind of stuff. Elevator, all the steel in the elevator went off track, so the elevator wouldn't work. And that was outside where he was aiming. That happened outside where he was aiming.
You know that picture I have with the car that's parked upside down in front of the SUV?
Yeah.
That was the first picture I sent to John Hutchinson when I contacted him. I said, does your neighborhood ever get to looking like this? kind of half as a joke.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking like the powder and all that doesn't get me as much as the effects on the metal, the car, the burning cars. That is pretty odd with the weather, too. That's another anomaly, that the weather just changes.
Luminescence and melting without heating. That's one of the characteristics of the Hutchinson effect.
Yeah.
And I think there is this weird thing with the luminescence at room temperature, because if you look at it, you see that, I call it the Cheeto picture, it looks like a Cheeto on the ground, that digger is picking up that glowing thing. If you don't, you know, immediately assume that it's hot because it's orange and start looking a little bit deeper, you know, like I said, at first I thought it was a bogus picture because the hydraulics are working. But then I realized when I got on the Hutchinson effect that there is an explanation, there's an example, there's evidence of this having been demonstrated before.
Yeah. Well, this is pretty funny because I think I'm getting the Hutchinson effect on our stream to the broadcast server. I've never had this happen before, I can say. Only on 7 years, so I guess...
Did somebody hack into it?
No, it appears that the line coming from where I'm at to the servers is running out of bandwidth, which it's like 2 megs up, you know, meg and a half,
okay.
I guess. So I that's not even close to what I'm using. So I will say that, the people who are popping in and out, I mean, obviously the archive will be on the site. To get the missing points here at the end. It is funny, we get to the end, we're talking about the actual mechanism is what, when things mess up. So that's, I would put that in the impressive category, the fact that this is screwing up. So you got me thinking there. But it's like, okay, let's say that they did have this Hutchinson thing, they did it. And it's covered
up. I believe it's the same physics involved.
Right.
It may not be the exact same thing, but same physics.
Because I know I talked a lot with Ariel Louise, who used to handle Hutchinson's his work and so on. She told me many, many hours talking with her about his work. I've talked with him a lot. The Army, Navy, everybody else was up there with cameras every angle you could think of. They had him doing it over and over and over again. And the
in 83, for 4 months, he had various people from the Pentagon.
Yeah, so they're very aware of what he was doing. They probably may even know what he did better than he, because when talking with him, I got the impression that tinkering, knowledge, and luck kind of had it happen, as opposed to like a good battle plan. And they may have taken his work and found it and did it. But now my question is, okay, so let's just say they have this. It doesn't make me feel any more secure, like we actually have any say-so or power in this country when they can make buildings disappear.
Yes, exactly. And that's why I'm doing this. And I think we need to know. And this energy also has the ability, this technology has the ability to provide us with free energy.
Well, right, provided, but the people who are doing this with the free energy aren't about to give it to us, and the only way we'll see it, I guess, is if we're at the other end of the beam, and if we get too far out of line.
And, yeah, they can do that.
I would imagine. If they can knock the building down and do a pretty good job of it, I think they could do a lot of stuff.
So do we want to live in fear, or...
Well, no, I'm not. I mean, look at it. I mean, what am I going to do? I mean, I'm not in fear of it, but it seems to be like there has to be some offsetting force here that could allow us, assuming we wake up to say something to them or to stop them. And it doesn't seem that unless there's a lot of people inside who come out, if you will, you know, it seems like it's kind of messed up. Like, I don't want to say hopeless, because, you know, there's always hope, but it seems like it would take a miracle, or it would take like the spontaneous awakening of people all throughout the government in deep inside to wake up and come out of it, because you're going to need people to run this thing. You can't do it all by yourself.
Right. I think that there are people out there quietly rooting for me. And if we have enough of them, you know, then if people just are awake enough.
All right. Well, how about, we got a couple minutes left here. What about suggestions?
Well, one of the reasons why I have this legal case that I have is that's still ongoing is to bring that to light. You know, trying all of the legal ways we have of dealing with this. And let's hope that the case gets heard.
Well, I hope so. But
other suggestions?
But let's face it, if the 9/11 movement isn't that popular, isn't that well known yet, you within the 9/11 movement is even less. What makes you say you don't just trip and fall and break your neck tomorrow? You know, I mean, how do you know you're not just going to, wake up dead, so to speak?
My information's out there. It wouldn't do a whole lot. The information is there.
You would have to have, other people carrying the torch.
Right.
And continuing. I know it is safest in public. So it's good to do this in public. That's the safest place to be.
Thanks. That's why I've always half-finished web pages. I don't want to keep it hidden.
Right, and I can also see what happens when you do go public.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty interesting. I've never had this issue happen.
It's interesting how, this pernicious debunking. Like, why am I so important to them if it's bogus?
Well, yeah. Well, one of the problems, what I think of the powers that be, would just sit back and wait for the 9/11 truth movement to disintegrate on itself, because a lot of people who are attracted to it perhaps for the wrong reasons. They're not attracted to it for truth, to find out. There are people out there who will believe and go after all kinds of dark conspiracy-type theories because of the fact that they're an alternative thing. They don't pick them out because they're the best choice or because... it points out anomalies. It's like it's always going to be the dark, men in black somewhere. No, regardless, I mean, if they can't start their car in the morning, it's going to be called. Obviously, the men in black got it. So a lot of those people are in that movement, which doesn't do it any good. There's people with egos using it to prop up their own agendas, and a lot of that people are attracted to it. So it is in trouble. Though there's a lot of normal people too.
I don't consider myself part of the official truth movement, or as I put it, the movement towards the official truth.
Well, I from what I have seen in researching on you, getting ready for the show, there's not a lot of people who they would agree with you that you are not in the official deal.
Right.
The reason why I'm having you on is because I want to know everything. I want to know all sides, all deals. So put it out there. So
I admire
people
you for
hear.
That.
I, you know, I'll bring up my questioning, like, you know, well, you could say this, that, whatever. But it's not trying to debunk or trying to argue. It's just having a healthy discussion. And I don't know why. What can't people have a healthy discussion without name calling and all that other stuff?
I don't either. It should be about the evidence.
People can find out. There's much more on the website. We did a quick run-through. It is drjudywood.com. And I appreciate being here. And perhaps you can contact me with any more new information, and we can check back from time to time and see what's happening.
Great. And I so much appreciate your having me on, and quite heroic to do so.
Well, I'll see if my computer stuff is fried tomorrow.
Okay.
If I got any of those beams coming, if my computer stuff's all twisted in little pretzel shapes, I'll give you a call.
Okay.
All righty, we'll talk to you. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
All right, we will see you next week live, feet to the fire. Keep on keeping on. Reach for the skies within.